From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
Coming up, we try to figure out how to meet California's ambitious energy goals. We start with a new take on an old staple, the battery.
So I think this was a great tool, good for, you know, kids to learn where the energy comes from.
Then a program that gives San Franciscans access to 100% renewables. How many homes and businesses are enrolled?
We're saying only, and that's true, but wow, 8,000. It used to be zero.
And we'll learn about East Bay residents who've changed their attitudes towards conservation.
And all along our street, we all have our little signs saying, my lawn's green because I'm using recycled water.
How will the Bay Area become a super green city in the next 15 years? Find out today on Cross Currents. The Bay Area is quickly headed towards using more and more renewable energy. The state has set ambitious goals. At least a third of our energy must come from renewable sources by the year 2020. So how do we do it? Renewable energies like wind and solar aren't consistent, but there's a simple technology, one that you already use many times every day that could change that, the battery. KALW's Lisa Bartfai tells us more.
Hirumi Fujimaclure and her husband live in a nice two-story house in Morgan Hill, south of San Jose. It gets pretty hot there in the summers, so they have a large swimming pool and AC in the whole house. But listen to how much she pays for electricity.
Our electricity is minus $5.
Yes, you heard that right. Her bill is negative $5. She actually gets money back. This is because of the solar panels and the battery storage system she uses to power the house. Fujimaclure walks into the garage to show me.
So this is our battery system. So this is 10 kilowatt hour battery, which is kind of neat, small. We even don't realize the battery is here.
Yeah, it almost looks like a mini fridge or a mini bar in a hotel room.
Yeah, mini bar like a hotel room.
Fujimaclure works for the Japanese company Tabuchi Electric, which recently started selling batteries on the U.S. market. These aren't just any old batteries. They charge up on solar and then store that energy so it can be used as electricity later on. Fujimaclure got interested in the batteries after the earthquake in Japan in 2011. Over 500,000 people didn't have power, but a coworker did. He had solar panels and a battery at his house.
Most of the other people, you know, even shower, you know, they couldn't take shower, and, you know, their life was miserable. But only one guy, he had a solar, and his life didn't change much.
Fujimaclure says since then, the batteries have become more popular in Japan, and people in the U.S. are getting interested, too. They buy their batteries from electric car companies like Tesla, which has already sold thousands this year. Or they get them as add-ons with solar panels. Like in Japan, some people use their batteries for emergency backups in situations like earthquakes. Others want to lower their dependency on fossil fuels. And some people are thinking even bigger, like energy storage expert and battery advocate Janice Lin, who says batteries could dramatically decrease pollution.
Because just like a car or a jet engine, if you think about a gas generator, it's basically a big piece of equipment that, in your car, if you're in city driving and you're stop and go a lot, it produces more pollution, your gas mileage isn't as good.
Right now, most people's energy consumption is kind of like Bay Area traffic, irregular with lots of stops and starts. We're out during the day, and when we come home, we turn all of our appliances on at once. In the future, Lynn thinks that extra sudden burst of energy could come from a battery that's been charging up on solar power all day.
Because when we put energy storage or a little bit of inventory into our electric power system, it makes our system run more smoothly, more efficiently, with less pollution, and that makes our air more livable, more breathable, and it makes our electric bills a whole lot cheaper.
That's the ideal vision, though some clean energy advocates don't share it. Al Weinrub is the coordinator of the local Clean Energy Alliance in Oakland. They don't think batteries are a realistic solution.
The answer is that you have an economic development plan which addresses real human needs. And one of the most important human needs is to get off fossil fuel and to live in sustainable communities.
VineRope is interested in creating net zero communities here in the Bay, neighborhoods that can create as much energy as they use, not just net zero homes. And some kind of energy storage is part of that vision.
A lot of people are developing these new storage devices. What we should do is use them, right? That's good. We should look at the environmental impact of them. That's right. We need to look at the cost. We need to see who's producing them. Can we produce them?
But he thinks technology is just one part of the puzzle. Job creation is another. He's not sure that batteries will do it. And he's also concerned about expense. Battery systems like Fuji McClure's cost about $13,000.
There's a question about how do you finance these things for a low-income community?
Energy advocate Janice Lin thinks that the price will come down as the batteries become more popular. She's also hoping that lawmakers will catch on to the benefits of batteries and make them easier to access. There's already a state-run incentive program to make it more affordable.
As with any new application, introducing a new product, a new technology, it's a new thing. It's a new behavior. And so that's why these incentives are absolutely necessary.
Here we start using a dryer.
Oh, wow.
In Morgan Hill, Harumi Fuji McClure walks back into the house to show me a little monitor on the wall in the hallway. It looks kind of like an alarm system, but this screen shows a house, a battery, a power station, and a brightly shining sun with arrows connecting the different symbols.
So now it's almost 7 kilowatt.
When she turns on the dryer, arrows on the monitor start pointing to the house from the battery and the sun. That's where the power is coming from.
So I think this is a great tool, not only for just, you know, us to save money, but good for, you know, kids to learn where the energy comes from and how to save it.
It's not just about saving energy, it's also about generating it. Fuji McClure now has so much extra energy stored in her battery during the day that she can actually sell some back to PG&E. She's counting on getting about $3,000 back every year through those sales and the energy incentive program she's enrolled in. She's happy about that, but it will still take her 5 years to break even on what she paid for the battery. She's expecting the battery to last for 5 more years after that. Then it's off to recycling, and Fuji McClure will have to decide if it's worth it to invest again. For Cross Currents, I'm Lisa Bartfai.
Lisa Bartfai is a student reporter in KALW's Audio Academy. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. California took a huge leap towards its green energy future earlier this week when PG&E announced that they'll be closing the state's last nuclear plant by the year 2025. But for San Franciscans who want to go green before then, there's Clean Power SF. It's a locally managed power supplier, and it gives customers the option to get more renewable than they can get through PG&E. Customers can choose the green package that has 35% renewable energy, or they can choose the super green package, which is totally renewable. Some 8,000 San Francisco homes and businesses were automatically enrolled in the program last month. KALW's Lisa Bartfai talked to Assistant General Manager of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, Barbara Hale, about how Clean Power SF works.
How do I know that I'm getting my 100% renewable?
So really what you're doing is you're participating in the program. That's making decisions on your behalf to have a higher renewable content, right? But the laws of physics are the laws of physics. Electricity is going to flow on the system. On the path of least resistance. So unless you actually have power generation physically at your house or at your business behind the meter and not flowing onto the grid, you don't know what the mix is. It's going to be a blend. What's important about Clean Power SF is we're making the commitment to a greener electric supply.
And so, as we mentioned, only 8,000 people are enrolled so far. That must be just a fraction of San Francisco. So when can the rest of the city expect to be enrolled in Clean Power SF?
Yeah, well, so we're saying only, and that's true, but wow, 8,000. And it used to be zero. So we're looking at that as the starting point. Those 8,000 accounts amount to about 30 megawatts. As you said, we started that service May 1. Our next enrollment for additional customers is August 1st.
You're scaling up quite a lot. So mm-hmm. Where are you going to be finding this renewable energy?
So the development of renewables in the state of California is pretty robust. There are quite a number of market players, quite a number of developers. There's a queue of developers signing up projects for transmission access to the grid and developing those projects throughout the state. Wind, solar, biomass are very actively being developed in California. And with California's laws changing to increase the required amount of renewables that any electric power provider needs to have, there's sort of a clear, forced, if you will, market incentive for that development to continue. So we are pretty confident that when we need the power supply and we need it to be renewable, it'll be there for us.
So I'm speaking with Barbara Hale here at her office at the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, and you do water, power, and sewage, maybe the less sexy part of the job. I know that in some other states, for example, Texas, consumers can go out onto the energy market and buy for themselves. They don't have to wait for their city to buy for them. How come San Francisco can't do that? How come they can't choose among any provider and get whatever mix of renewables they like at a price that works for them?
Yeah, so we're operating in a market that's regulated by the state. The California legislature allows cities and collections of cities like counties to become the supplier for electricity. And that's the area that is open in the market, is that choice for local governing boards to participate on behalf of their residents and businesses in their jurisdiction. So we just are operating under a different regulatory structure here in California that has just limited participation on the wholesale market to provide retail service to customers like San Francisco businesses and residents.
And is there something else sort of in your climate dream scenario? Is there something else alongside Clean Power SF that could really get us there and help us achieve those climate goals?
Yeah, so we are actively engaged in greening San Francisco's electric supply on two fronts, really. Our Clean Power SF program is one, and that's a partnership with PG&E, where we provide just the supply. We're also the power provider for San Francisco's essential services, the electric muni cars, the city hall, the fire and police stations, all currently receive Hetch Hetchy power from our hydroelectric and water system, water conveyance system. And that's 100% greenhouse gas free electric supply. We'd be happy to bring more of that here to San Francisco.
That was Barbara Hale, Assistant General Manager at the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. She spoke with KLW's Lisa Bartfy. Find out more about Clean Power SF and other programs like it at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. The last major energy crisis in California happened in the early 2000s, and it was caused by a severe drought that led to the highly controlled energy market we have today. These past few years without rain were even drier, but California weathered it with few major blackouts. Instead, Governor Jerry Brown established water restrictions that were only slightly relaxed last month. But saving water has become a way of life for many people in the Bay Area, especially in the hotter and drier East Bay neighborhoods. And residents of Pleasanton and San Ramon have found that they can save water and their gardens at the same time. In this audiograph from 2015, KALW's Audrey Dilling went to check it out. Elaine Sargent is leaning into her open minivan, holding a hose that looks kind of like a gas pump nozzle. But it's spewing water.
I'm just filling up some containers. I was filling individual bottles, but it's so windy that they blow all over.
Instead of seats, there are two plastic tubs sitting on the floor of Sargent's van. They're about the size of laundry baskets. The water lapping at their rims is treated wastewater. That's because we're at the Dublin San Ramon Services District Recycled Water Fill Station in Pleasanton. It's a big concrete complex where sewage comes for a second chance. About a year ago, the district started giving away this recycled water for free. You can't drink it, but it's safe for plants. Great for them, actually. It works kind of like fertilizer. I'll let you connect the dots on that one. Sargent comes here to pick it up about twice a month.
Well, because we're on water restrictions and I try to keep alive my roses.
There are about 20 stations with hoses just like the one Sargent is using, and the cars are lining up. Anyone is allowed to pull up and fill up. They just need to sign some paperwork first, basically promising not to drink it. A few stalls over, Jane McCoy has dialed in her own system. This is clearly something that takes some time, and a car helps.
So I have 6 5-gallon buckets that fit in the back of my Prius, and I fill them all up, take them home.
McCoy says she'll make this trip 5 times today.
And with a little dolly, I roll them over to a 32-gallon garbage can and lift and pour them all in, and then I have a sump pump that hooks onto a hose and I can water my lawn.
That's really complicated.
Well, that's what I need to do to keep my yard green.
McCoy lives just down the road from here.
And all along our street, we all have our little signs saying, my lawn's green because I'm using recycled water.
That's to stave off drought shaming, when your neighbors report you for wasting drinking water on your lawn. It's also to help spread the word about the free water. Stephanie Olson from the Dublin San Ramon Services District says there are 1,100 registered customers of the fill station and counting.
So on a given day, I know that we've had over 300 to 400 folks come in.
People can take as much water as they want, but they're limited to 300 gallons per trip. Olson says that's to protect people and their cars.
Yeah, water's really heavy.
A lot of people here today look like they're prepared to take the maximum load or close to it. We're surrounded by pickup trucks hauling big plastic tanks that carry hundreds of gallons.
Like the one in front of us right now is 275, right around there.
You can just tell that by looking at it.
We've seen a lot of these lately, so yeah.
There's actually a little bit of a giant plastic jug business boom going on right now. At least that's according to some people I talk to, like Greg Rickman. He says those big tanks are hard to come by. So he and his wife drive here from Tracy with 2 blue barrels in their truck bed.
Did you ever think that you would be in this, like that we would be at this place where we pick up recycled water?
Oh, no.
Are you from California? Like?
No, we're born and raised in California. And so we've been through some bad droughts, but never thought it would be like this.
He's right. This is the worst drought in more than a century. But there's no shortage of wastewater. Stephanie Olson from the Water District says this plant treats about 10.5 million gallons per day. They've given away just a little more than 1 million in the entire year. In Pleasanton, I'm Audrey Dilling for Cross Currents. You can find the address of the recycled water fill station at our website, kalw.org. Click Cross Currents, and we'll have a new mystery sound next week. Are you ready for your sneak listen? Here we go.
To me, I like it, though. Sometimes I come and stand right here and just listen to it. I don't even go in there and buy nothing in Burger King.
If you think you know what that was and where we recorded it, give us a call and tell us. The number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We'll tell you the story behind the sound next week. And also, where do you think we should record next? Email us at news@kalw.org and tell us. Your idea just might get picked to be an audiograph. That's all for us. Our team includes Bonnie Chan, Jurgen Klem, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Lucy Kang, Justine Lee, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, James Rollins, Raja Shah, Stephen Short, and Judy Silber. Today is Audrey Dilling's last day here at KALW, and we cannot say enough how much we'll miss her.
Do I have any nicknames? Oh, no. Yeah, I do. I was just thinking about how people on my volleyball team used to call me Odd Squad. Which is so horrible. My name is Audrey Dilling. Squadry Dilling. My name is Uadry Dilling. My name is Audrey Dilling.
Onward, Audrey. Our managing editor is Jen Chien, managing producer is Julie Kane, Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by San Francisco musician Tito Gonzalez, bringing you beats from his native home, Havana. Tito y su son de Cuba will be on stage at the Freight and Salvage Coffee House in Berkeley on Sunday night. The performance starts at 7 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Papa. La línea divina.